afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinions and commentary on today's political and economic issues. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
I forgot to say the date. It is July 8th, 2019. Monday. It's kind of a blue Monday today on the Eastern Shore. Cloudy, rainy all day. It's kind of nice, though. It doesn't have to water the grass anymore. get a reprieve from doing that. My water company loves me, but other than that, it was kind of a beautiful day. Humidity broke a little, but major flooding in some cities on the East Coast. I saw, you know, a little bit of D.C. getting a little bit hammered, but it is what it is, ladies and gentlemen, and the markets are what they are. And I just saw this headline here, and it just reminded me of robbing Peter to pay Paul. $15 minimum wage would boost pay for 17 million, but 1.3 million would lose their jobs. This comes from the CBO. So, yeah, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Who cares about those 1.3 million that would lose their jobs? Anyway, that's another story. That's another day, and we'll talk about it here in the near future. Let's go ahead and get to the gold and silver pricing today. We have gold. Pressure on gold. Come on, computer. Don't freeze up on me now. Down $6, $13.93. We did have a high early in trade, $14.08. And again, this is the New York spot price aftermarket. So I'll let you know what the August futures are. See where they ended up at. Silver was up 2 pennies today at $15.09. Platinum was up $6 at $819. Palladium was down 10 at $15.69. And let's see. I do believe my computer has frozen, Dave. Nope. Let's see. Trying to get my computer person here. It's been quite difficult here as, you know, they're always so busy. And as long as I've got two computers working, they're not much in a hurry. Dow was down 115 points today at 26,806. The NASDAQ was down 63 points at 8,098. S&P was down 14 at 2,975. 10-year yield, 2.03%. European Asian markets were fairly quiet. Hong Kong was down a little over 1.5%. Let's see, motion driving the fear, 58, so there's really no fear out there. And let's see if there's anything interesting else to mention in these markets. Let me go back and I know what I wanted to see. Gold contract. Bear with me, ladies and gentlemen. I know there's not supposed to be dead air on the radio, but gold, August contract, $13.96. And let me see if I can get back and give you my oil pricing and the USDX. Bear with me. Dave, I don't know if you have that, but my computer just...
57.47, down about 4 cents a barrel, oil. U.S. dollar index... last one, 97.41.
Okay. All righty. So, yes, it's a good thing that we got those numbers done as all that bouncing around just froze my computer. But anyway, as I mentioned today, we saw stocks fall today. We had losses in Apple shares. Of course, that pressured the broader tech sector. And you definitely have this risk is increasing in tech. You know, especially, it's just common sense with especially higher priced stocks. Part of tech's challenge is that it's comping against a tough 2018, as we saw these tech earnings lag the broader markets last year. And tax reform more favorably impacted other sectors, and expectations for 2020 don't improve dramatically. But everyone is all waiting to hear. All ears and eyes are going to be on the Fed Chair Jerome Powell. He's heading to Capitol Hill. He's going to testify before the House and the Senate He's on that. Actually, Dave, he's on the House on Wednesday and the Senate on Thursday.
True.
So we'll have to see what's going to be happening there. Any rate increases?
That's a good question. What do you think? 50, 25, or nothing at all this month?
I don't think they're going to do anything at all.
Yeah, I think they'll go 25.
Up or down?
Oh, down. Just because they can't help themselves. Won't be too long, just 21 days. 23 days, beg your pardon, July 31st. We'll know for sure. I mean, traders have already priced in a 100% probability of a cut in July. That's according to the CME Group's FedWatch tool. But expectations for a more aggressive cut of 50 basis points, 0.5%, were certainly tempered by the jobs data released on last Friday. Now, as listeners know, the president announced last week of his plans to nominate Judy Shelton and Christopher Waller to the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. Waller is an economist who's worked for the St. Louis Fed for 10-plus years, whose president, James Bullard, has advocated for a more dovish Fed policy, and just a few weeks ago said he was in favor of a rate cut, actually in June. Shelton's an economist and a frequent Fed critic. In 2018, the Senate confirmed her as the U.S. director to the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development.
We know the President Trump's had three unsuccessful attempts thus far to fill seats on the Fed board, and this has all come amid his outspoken and unprecedented attacks against the interest rate hikes. So, yes, as you mentioned, traders have priced in 100% a probability of a Fed rate cut this month, but I don't think they're going to do it. I don't see it justifies. I mean, what? Their inflation, jobs report, I mean, record stock numbers. How can they cut except other than the pressure from the White House would be the only reason they would do so?
I don't know. It's a good question. Certainly, he'll be asked about Fed independence, and you know he'll talk about he'll use you know the traditional Fed speak to say how important that is as a concept and practice. At the same time, the Open Market Committee could, and I think will indeed, give in to both presidential and Wall Street pressure to cut rates a little bit right away. Hope I'm wrong. I think it's the wrong move at the wrong time. But, I'm a believer that, growing stronger and stronger, that the Fed just can't help itself and stay out of its own way. But, they proved this wrong not too long ago. More with respect to their couching language, but we only have about a little more than three weeks to find out for sure, Melody.
Well, you know, we pretty much know what he's going to say. He's going to be accommodative to the markets, data driven, accommodative, and that'll make everybody happy. And again, it's not what they do; it's what they say. But and they don't say enough about gold pushing through 2,000 by the end of this year.
How about it? You know, a solid payroll report for June is not enough to break the current bullish sentiment in the gold market. Its prices stayed, relatively near $1,400 as the new week is off and running. Two more experts believe the market's current momentum could lead gold testing its all-time highs by the end of this year. David Roach, who's president and global strategist at the London-based Independent Strategy, said he sees gold pushing to $2,000 an ounce by the end of the year, particularly as geopolitical uncertainty weighs on global investor sentiment. He said in an interview, I actually believe financial markets are now poised to crumble like a sand pile. His comments come as Gold prices continue holding critical psychological support. You know, in a day that's seen New York spot gold trading, what was 1394, roughly, August gold futures traded as high as 1401 today, although I didn't see where they were in aftermarket trading, Melody. 1396, did you say?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Is this a sign we're getting old, Dave?
No.
You know, we have seen gold fall from its recent highs. You know, I was doing some comparison on my $20 gold pieces today. And remember, I was selling Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces. They were selling at one point in time. And yes, so I have to adjust my prices in order to do this. This wasn't the normal pricing for them. There was adjustments on both sides, but I was able to sell 62 $20 Liberties and Saints at one time at the same spot as at the same price as spot, and then they gradually moved up to $50 more, $40. Now they're $130 more than bullion. So again, ladies and gentlemen, yes, you do have volatility with these coins. You know, they could drop, and we could go back to, I mean, my gosh, we're selling the premiums on the pre-33 coins are 20-year lows. So yeah, we can have some volatility in them. But anytime you have a product that can outperform the general market, you're going to have volatility. But the thing of it is, we have fundamental reasons why they will outperform. You know, the fundamental basis of the $20 gold pieces, you know, they're going to do what they've always done before in a fear-driven market. They're going to outperform gold bullion. And I had a great conversation with some future clients today, hopefully real soon. But and that was the thing. What do we do with these coins then? And we don't talk about this. And I want to get back to, you know, the gold pricing going to 2,000. But what you're going to do, based on what happens, is you'll be trading these $20 gold pieces for bullion coins. But we have to wait and see what happens at that point in time. We might just keep holding them. But the whole thing of an investment, what you want to do is increase your holdings. You can't do that with gold bullion. All you'll ever have is 1 ounce gold. Now, that's not a bad thing to have. But you won't be able to trade that 1 ounce gold bullion and get 2 ounces of gold for it. But the possibilities for the $20 gold pieces, you can. And I'm going to go back to the example from 2009 when spot gold was a little over $1,100 and your pre-33 coins, your 62s, they were selling for $1,900. So you could trade that one coin in and get more than an ounce. And that's the whole point. And these weren't the highs. This is just, I just happened to randomly pull out that pricing sheet, and I've been using that because that way we have some, you know, stable numbers to continue to make these comparisons. So that's what you're going to do. If you went up to like the 63 $20 gold pieces, when they were selling for $3,000, when gold was $1,100, you'd be able to trade one for almost 2 ounces. And that's the whole point. The 65 $20 Liberties that you buy today at $2,500, they were selling for, you know, $5,000 at $1,100. Look how many ounces of gold you could get for that. So that's key, ladies and gentlemen. And so I'm pleased to see these premiums beginning to increase. That means interest is picking up. The gold market, of course, when you see it go from $1,250 to, you know, over $1,400 in a very short period of time, that's going to increase interest. And I think as we continue with these outside influence, when we see the rumors and rumors, wars and rumors of wars, and you hear all the predictions from various analysts of market crashes, and like this gentleman is talking about, you know, the paper markets are poised to crumble like a sand pile, people are going to start paying attention. We've been talking about negative interest rates across Europe. Oh, yeah, that's a good deal. Yeah, okay. I'm going to pay you to keep my money. Yeah, that works. You're supposed to be using other people's money. I don't know, Dave. It's just kind of, just kind of bizarre. So again, it's be diversified in your portfolios, and there are good pricing out there, and you know, you need to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And again, we talked about the loose monetary policy that's keeping bond yields at 2%, and that's slightly up from last week's multi-year lows. So that's your market expectations. And low bond yields support higher gold prices, reducing the precious metals opportunity cost as a non-yielding asset. So Roach said that he expects the Fed to lower interest rates at the end of the month. So you agree with him, Dave, huh?
No, he agrees with me.
Oh, well, yes. I'm my apologies.
All respect due to Mr. Roach.
But so, you know, he also says, you know, he anticipates gold to do well, and he's looking forward to 2,000 by the end of the year. And hey, depending on what happens, we could far pass 200 or 2,000.
Yeah, well, you know, moving overseas, I mean, the European precious metals retailer Degussa said that, you know, they see gold prices pushing higher through the rest of the year as well, as global interest rates in particular head lower. Degussa said they see U.S. interest rates falling to as low as 1.25% by the first half of 2020. That's pretty significant given, you know, their at roughly double that now in the upper range.
Let me ask you a question. He's anticipating a 1.25% by the first half of next year here in the States. How would the economy be reflected? That's showing a pretty bad economy if they'd have to drop it to 1.25.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's got to be assuming, you know, continued slow growth in the U.S. and particularly in Europe and Asia. Certainly European Central Bank, they've got to, you know, see continued in fact they see the European interest rates falling further into negative territory from 0.4% now to about 0.7%, you know, plus with a rise of inflation, you know, real interest rates could fall into negative territory as well. So, you know, the investment in gold becomes even more rewarding as the holder of gold doesn't forego interest income. So, and, you know, Degussa, you know, they're right, and they say not only does gold look good in a low interest rate environment, it's also a solid protection in a financial crisis, which we continue to get closer and closer to with each passing month, it seems, Melody.
Absolutely. And I think we're heading into a break. We can finish up this conversation here when we get back. So please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It almost sounds like I'm losing my voice a little bit today. Not quite sure why, but maybe I just talked too much today on the phone with customers. And plus, I was up late last night. Did you ever see the movie Imitation of Life?
Not that I know of. It doesn't ring a bell.
It is one of the most powerful movies. It's a movie. It's I don't know. You guys, you could call it in today's term a chick flick, but it's about two women, and it's about a movie star and her maid, her helper, and they're girls. It's a powerful movie. It's a tearjerker beyond a tearjerker. It puts love story to. to shame. And it's one of Imitation of Life is just one of my all-time favorite movies for, you know, just life. And it has so many messages in it. And my other one, of course, is Jimmy Stewart with the Glenn Miller story. But this one is so, and I watched it last night, and of course it was a tearjerker and it kept me up all night. So anyway, You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. So if you can find it, ladies and gentlemen, Imitation of Life, and powerful movie, particularly, you know, because it involves women and their trials and tribulations and the relationships between mothers and daughters and friends and employees. And so it was and at the very end, I'm telling you, a good 20 minute sob. Anyway, what's next, Dave?
Well, we've got European Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström signaled over the weekend that she expects the U.S. and EU to hit each other with tariffs as retaliation over illegal government aid to Airbus and Boeing. Malmström said the U.S. is entitled to strike first by the end of the summer, and the EU would follow suit 5 to 6 months later after the World Trade Organization faulted both sides in a 14-year-old dispute, actually disputes, over aircraft subsidies. Malmström also repeated a preference to seek a negotiated settlement with Washington. She told a conference in Brussels today, "We are both sinners. So with that, we are entitled to take action against each other. This would be very unfortunate, of course," she continued, "because even if we both have sinned, we should put our different sanctions in the freezer and say, let's talk." So this simmering Boeing-Airbus dispute threatens to worsen transatlantic commercial ties in the midst of a couple of other notable trade wars, Melody.
Well, you know, now these new threats come as the EU presses the Trump administration to refrain from imposing these tariffs on the European automotive goods based on national security grounds. The EU, the U.S. has threatened to seek $11 billion in damages through duties on European goods, ranging from helicopters to cheese to counter state aid to Airbus. But in response, the EU has published a preliminary list of U.S. goods, from ketchup, video game consoles, being targeted in a $12 billion plan for retaliatory levies over subsidies to Boeing. Of course, these actions would be WTO compatible. Aren't they just playing these cat and mouse, tit for tat type of, you know, it's almost like, can't these people grow up and do some, is this how international trade agreements are done in today's world? But still, she added it would be in the interest of everybody to enter into negotiations, avoid retaliation, because there's always the ordinary people, ordinary consumers, small companies who are affected. Like, they really could care about the smaller people and the ordinary people. It's all about them. But go ahead. Next.
It's true. Well, last week's mini drama over President Trump's 4th of July speech, with all its military accompaniment, shouldn't distract anyone from the far more significant story of global democratic decline on this 243rd anniversary of American independence. Frederick Kemp, who was the Wall Street Journal's longest-serving European editor, says dangers are accelerating to the democratic ideals that the American Revolution inspired. And he says, if no unanticipated shock disrupts current trajectories, like a democratic uprising in China, a Russian regime change, or, you know, a Venezuelan dictator's decline, then autocratic powers will surpass democracies in their economic size and influence within the coming decade. And history has shown that prosperity often precedes such political dominance.
But, you know, we really do see this as it's changing as you see Russia and China, what they're doing. I mean, it really is. And I saw a quote from someone this weekend. I think the quote was credited to Napoleon Bonaparte. And he said that China is a sleeping bear. You don't want to awaken it. And we have awakened. He said, be prepared if you awaken China. And I think that's exactly China has been awakened. And, you know, we often talk about on this program, Dave, you know, that this is truly all by design. They're lowering the U.S. standard of living. And they're increasing, you know, these other, you know, it's bringing in balance the standard of living across the world. They're bringing ours down and increasing the others. And, you know, it is interesting to see, and you can talk about all the various different reasons and so forth that this is occurring, but it is. And it's, I don't know where it all ends. I mean, we're all struggling to get to the top of the pile. And it's again, these countries are no longer countries. We're all economies, and that's what it's all based on. And we're giving up our freedoms and our liberties, and all based on an economy and a stock market. So, but I don't know what else you want to say about that. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little more?
Well, you know, as recently as 1990, you know, countries that were rated not free by Freedom House accounted for only 12% of global national income. Now they produce a full one-third. That's matching the level that authoritarian-run economies achieved during the rise of European fascism in the 1930s. And that raises some unsettling questions. For one, how much of democracy's success came from the attraction of Western values like free speech and individual rights? How much instead was a result of new democracies wanting to hitch their wagons to American and Western European prosperity and extract themselves from the bankruptcy of the Soviet and other similarly constructed state-controlled systems? Kemp believes it was a product of both, but democracies, he believes, will struggle more in a contest with autocracies if they produce less comparative prosperity over time. That's a long discussion, and it could take us in a number of different directions. So we'll conclude this discussion on the rise of autocratic capitalism on Wednesday's program. Melody.
Well, you know, and one thing we always have to remember, and I don't know how it fits in the rest of the world, that we are a republic. And, you know, and we've, again, just like you said in that, you know, we've given up, you know, our liberties and so forth. So, you wrote in today's newsletter, a quarter of Americans say they never plan to retire. And of course, our newsletter is going to be published today. And they can go to our website, dgscoins.com, and sign up for it. And this was a new survey that almost a quarter of Americans say they never plan to retire, Dave.
Yeah, you know, it's another, it must be poll season, poll release season. We've been talking a lot about these numbers the past 2 weeks. But, you know, Jerome Powell's impending testimony later this week and, you know, the nominations of Shelton and Waller to the Fed come as a backdrop to this poll suggesting a disconnect between individuals' retirement plans and the realities of aging in today's workforce. You know, experts report that illness and injury, layoffs, and caregiving responsibilities even are forcing older workers to leave their jobs sooner than they'd like. But according to this report from the Associated Press and the NORC, N-O-R-C, Center for Public Affairs Research, 23% of workers, including about one in five of those over 50, don't expect to ever stop working. For acronym lovers out there, NORC stands for Nonpartisan and Objective Research Organization of the University of Chicago. I guess they this is an abbreviation of the acronym. Now, another quarter say they'll continue working beyond their 65th birthday. I know, I'm one of them. So happens to be my beautiful mother, who told me recently that she finally plans to retire for good next April, at the ripe young age of 81.
You know, my uncle worked until he was 80.
Yeah.
He worked till 80 full time. Does your mother work full time?
She does.
Yeah. It's I hope we can. I hope I can be working. But according to the federal government, about one in five people 65 and older, I'm only 39, so I got a long way to go.
Yes, and take your time.
I will. And older was working on actively looking for a job in June. And you also wrote that for many of them, money has a lot to do with the decisions to keep working.
Well, apparently so, Melody. Anki Chen of the Retirement Research at Boston College said the average retirement age that we see in the data has gone up a little bit, but it hasn't gone up that much. So people have to live in retirement much longer, and they just may not have enough assets to support themselves. When asked how financially comfortable they feel about retirement, only 14% of Americans under 50 and 29% 50 or over say they feel extremely or very prepared. Another 40% of older adults say they feel somewhat prepared, while about one-third feel unprepared. By comparison, 56% of younger adults say they don't feel prepared for retirement. Among those who are already fully retired, 38% said they felt very or extremely prepared when they retired, while a full 25% said they were not very or not at all prepared.
You say that some may ask of those in the later category, Dave, why did they retire if they felt they weren't prepared?
Well, let's answer that with a quote, compliments of Andrew Sorgel of AP, who wrote about the poll. Ronnie Bennett, now 78, said, one of the things about thinking about never retiring is that you didn't save a whole lot of money. Boing. Sorgel reports that Ronnie was pushed out of her job as a New York City-based website editor 15 years ago when she was 63, and she searched for work in the immediate aftermath of her layoff, a process she described as akin to banging my head against a wall. Ronnie, and I have a feeling anyone 50, 55 and over who've lost a job and are now trying to find a new one, especially if they've been working for the same company for 20 or more years, and you have more than just a few strands of gray hair, there are a lot of banging heads out there in the good old U.S. of A., and I'm sure it's just not in our country. But finding Manhattan too expensive without a steady stream of income, Ronnie eventually moved to Portland, Maine, and a few years later, she moved again to Lake Oswego, Oregon. Sometimes, she says, I fantasize that if I win the lottery, I'd go back to New York. Well, you know, Bennett, who has a blog called Time Goes By, and you can actually go to that. I breezed through a little bit over the weekend, some interesting information in there for older folks who've lost jobs. TimeGoesBy.net chronicles her experience of aging, relocating, and living with pancreatic cancer.
Meanwhile, you go on to mention Americans' mixed feelings of how the aging workforce affects workers.
Yeah, 39% of these poll respondents think that people staying in the workforce longer is mostly a good thing. 29% think it's a bad thing. They're mostly young people. And 30% say it makes no difference. A full 45% thinks it has a positive effect on the U.S. economy. Now, working Americans who are 50 and older think that trend is close to three times more positive than negative for their own careers, 42 to 15%. Those younger than 50 are about as likely to say it's good for their careers as to say it's bad. And last, just 6% of those who are fully retired said they left the labor market before turning 50. Not surprising, but remaining in the workforce may be unrealistic for people dealing with unexpected illnesses or injuries, or those with an aging parent that they have to take care of, especially those with little retirement assets.
And, you know, for them, you write that the high medical bills, lack of savings loom large over the day-to-day expenditures.
Yeah, another scary thing to think about as we get older, and the real nature of boomeritis just takes over. Take Larry Zarzecki of Baltimore. He said, people like me who are average, everyday working people can have something catastrophic happen, and we lose everything because of medical bills. Well, he should know. He's a former Maryland police officer who stopped working in his 40s after developing a resting tremor in his right hand, later diagnosed as Parkinson's disease and other cognitive issues that presumably go along with that. Now, as a result of early retirement, as Zarzecki said, he's learned to take from Peter and give to Paul. There's that quote again, Melody, to help make his ends meet. Now, he does receive a pension and health insurance from the state, but he spends about $3,000 out of pocket each year on medications. You know, he laments, I can't afford, nor will my insurance cover, the most modern medication there is for Parkinson's. He said for him and people like him, it's eat, heat, or treat. He said these are decisions that people in my position have to make. When it's cold out, or if it's real hot out, do you eat, heat, your home that is, or treat your ailment? Phew. It's a tough world out there, ladies and gentlemen. Be prepared for the unforeseen.
It really is, and we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back from break. Please stay tuned. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And we were just finishing up on that segment. Make sure you go to the website and sign up for the newsletter, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. You know, we're talking about retirement, people not being prepared, and it's interesting because I just received this letter today from a previous client for years and years ago, and I just love receiving these letters because he I'm not going to read the whole letter, but he talks about he was able to invest in precious metals and from the early 2000s he was able to buy gold and silver at record lows, of course from the knowledge that he learned various places, and of course my knowledge. And he began to plow most of his earnings at the time and into the precious metals. So he was able to go into retirement without the usual concerns and worries about how he was going to survive later in life. So he feels he's been really blessed. If there was ever a doubt from the various from all of our program, we just educate him on letting him know how, you know, he made the wise decision, and he believes that. And he's 68 years old, and he's so happy to have had this early exposure and your knowledge. He says, I have a comfortable retirement due to early investing in precious metals. And and I think we're still in early stages of the precious metals. As long as we have a fiat dollar, ladies and gentlemen, we're at lows until it gets corrected, because that's what gold is, and it's not going to change. Gold is money, and it's recognized worldwide. There's no claim of debt against it, and that's what's going to make it such a valuable. That's what's going to make it be the number one. That's why we're going to see changes in our monetary system. Yeah, I mean, that's another topic, and, you know, we need to go a little bit deeper in that and how and so forth. I mean, they're already talking about gold-backed bonds. I don't think that'll happen, but they're talking about it. But and we've heard various discussions. So when we're talking about retirement, I had a nice conversation this over the 4th with a financial planner, and she was telling me of a couple she's working with are in their 80s, and inflation is killing them. They're running out of money because of inflation. Inflation, yeah, we might talk that it's, you know, 1%, but it's going higher and higher and higher. So what's the best hedge against inflation? It's gold. So you want to protect your retirement, you better have some gold in your retirement. And so we continue to see these conflicts with other countries, and again, you have the U.S. and Iran going deeper and deeper into conflict. You know, we have stopped short of a war, but the likelihood of an armed conflict just continues to increase. Both countries, with all their all-or-nothing strategies, you know, basically are to blame. Iran has pursued a maximum resistance strategy, escalating into attacks on shipping lanes, downing the U.S. drone over the Persian Gulf. And whether you think some of these are, you know, are all questionable, the fact of it is, it's happening. You know, whether they're, you know, yeah, we can question who's really doing what and when, but the fact of it is, it's happening. And it's bringing closer to this, you know, to a conflict, an armed conflict, which I don't think anybody wants, Dave.
Well, you know, at least the U.S. seems to grasp this, Melody. Although, you know, Iran's nuclear program had become a focal point of U.S.-Iranian tensions, it was never the real source of bad feelings between our two countries. You know, the roots of those tensions lay a lot deeper in Iran's support for militant groups at war with Israel, for example, like Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Hezbollah in Lebanon, as well as its ties to enemies of U.S. Gulf allies such as the Houthis in Yemen. No less consequential was Iran's support for Iraqi militias that killed hundreds of U.S. military personnel, if not more, at the height of the Iraq War, and that continue to threaten the U.S. troops who remain there. Now, hoping to induce change in Iran's behavior, the president, Trump, withdrew from the 2015 nuclear deal in 2018 and embarked on a sanctions-based maximum pressure campaign. Taken together, Trump's 12 conditions essentially asked Iran to abandon its grand strategy and surrender its most valuable military deterrence.
You know, and I get the roots of those, you know, how deep they might lie, but, you know, we shouldn't have gone to war with Iraq, and therefore you wouldn't have had Iran's support for the Iraqi militias that killed the hundreds of U.S. personnel. And it's the same way with Israel, and the same way with the war with, you know, the Gulf, the U.S. Gulf allies like the Saudis and the Houthis. And, you know, it doesn't matter if that worked. They're killing, and we're supporting their killing of, you know, hundreds of thousands of Yemen civilians. It's just like, and they're all just all collateral damage, you know. So yeah, this is all going to come to a head. And I, you know, the U.S. has promised not only to lift sanctions on Iran, but also to help restore its economy and normalize diplomatic relations. So Iran rejected the demands outright. And yet Iran apparently neither amassed enough clout nor earned sufficient goodwill to secure foreign backing against the U.S. The regime was and is effectively alone. So with the U.S. sanctions beginning to take their toll, Iran needs to find a way out of this bind. It has three options. It can give in to the U.S. demands or at least appease D.C. by seeking dialogue. It can tough it out and hope that the administration loses the 2020 re-election bid, or it could push back and raise the stakes by showing it was prepared to escalate.
Well, judging by its recent behavior, Iran seems to have chosen door number three, with its attack on a U.S. drone and then on two oil tankers in the Persian Gulf. Iran has engineered an opportunity for dialogue on the one hand and promptly squandered it on the other. Neither side seems to want a war, but both are steadily moving in that direction. I mean, over the last week, the rhetoric on both sides has sunk to the level of schoolyard taunts. It's like you say, you know, where are the grown-ups, Melody? You know, what remains are two states unwilling to compromise right now, unable to talk, and too proud to back down. Now, here's a case where actions are probably louder than words. Neither side seems to want a war, but both sides are moving in that direction. But peace will not come through attacking ships or shooting slow planes out of the sky, Melody. A lasting solution to this crisis requires compromise on both sides, and especially an end to Iran's destabilizing foreign policy in that region. But these days, it seems less and less likely that Iran will follow that path. And gold and silver investors, as a result, should follow these developments very, very closely.
Yeah, and you know what? We have the war hogs. We've got Pompeo. We got Bolton. Yeah, that's who it is, right? Pompeo?
Uh-huh.
Did I say? Yeah, Pompeo. Yeah. We have Bolton. You know, we know where they want to go. They've been wanting to go there for years. So, yeah, and you know what, Dave, how can they even come to a compromise when you have so much outside influence from Israel, from the Saudis, you know, and on the other side, it's, there's no way they're going to come to a dialogue. You know, I don't see, hopefully they do, but I don't know. we've been fooled before. But let's move on to another topic, since war is not my cup of tea. Huawei, we've talked about Huawei on this program before, and Huawei is resumes
resumes.
A new analyst of the resumes of Huawei staff appeared to reveal deeper links between the technology giant and China's military and intelligence bodies that have been previously acknowledged. The analyst, which looks at employment records of Huawei employees, concluded that key-minded level technical personnel employed by Huawei have strong backgrounds in work that are closely associated with intelligence gathering and military activities. Some employees can be linked to specific instances of hacking or industrial espionage conducted against Western firms. Now, the study may heighten concerns among governments who are analyzing claims that Huawei poses a national security risk, Dave.
Yeah, this is interesting, curious. You know, it's likely to raise, I won't say conspiracy theories, but, you know, certainly comments questioning the motives of, you know, both, you know, the results of this particular study and Huawei's responses to it. I mean, some countries are worried that Huawei could install these so-called backdoors in its telecommunications equipment that would allow the Chinese government to access user data. Although Huawei has repeatedly denied it would ever engage in such activity. You know, the Huawei employees' resumes reportedly were leaked online from unsecured databases and websites run by recruitment firms. One resume appeared to show a person who simultaneously held a position at Huawei and a teaching and research role at a military university through which they were employed by the Chinese People's Liberation Army, the PLA. The study linked that employee to a section in the PLA that's responsible for the Chinese military space, cyber, and electronic warfare capabilities. Coincidence or what?
You can't tell me they're not doing it. The circumstantial evidence appears quite strong to support the valid concerns about the relationship between the Huawei and the PLA, and of course concerns about the intelligence gathering. There's another resume describes an individual who worked at Huawei but was a representative of a government entity responsible for espionage and counterintelligence. That individual engaged in behavior and describes planting information capture technology or software on Huawei products. Huh. I know. The resumes talk of behavior such as information interception and instances where a Huawei employee holds a dual position in the PLA Strategic Support Force that oversees the electronic warfare units. Wow. The editor-in-chief of the Chinese state-backed Global Times newspaper said it's common for ex-military personnel to join private companies. And, you know, I mean, look at all the gathering, the information, the data gathering on individuals. Why wouldn't they do it on, you know?
Yeah, it's certainly eye-raising. And, you know, it's common for ex-military personnel to join private companies. It could be so. I certainly don't know the practice in China of that. But I think one of these resumes that the study looked at was at the same time. They were simultaneously employed as a member of, you know, a military and intelligence arm of the PLA and or while working for Huawei. So come on here. What does Joe Biden say, Melody? Come on, man.
Oh, Lord. No, not you. No, no, no. Don't say it. Don't say it.
That's this not an endorsement, ladies and gentlemen.
No, 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 no. I thought this was interesting, where now China is buying rice from the United States for the first time ever. And when I used to market California when I was in an insurance business, I was surprised at how much rice California actually grows and around the Sacramento area. So now you have one of the largest private importers of rice in China recently bought rice from the U.S. for the first time ever from Sun Valley Rice. It's a U.S. company. It secured the Chinese contract. The Chinese importer bought two containers of median grain rice from the California-based company during the week of June 23rd in the midst of the trade war. Trump said a week ago that China has agreed to buy agricultural products from the U.S., but it still isn't clear if this rice sale is part of that concession. Now, Sun Valley Rice has been trying to get into this Chinese market since 2004. So, you know, they worked 15 years of patience and hard work, and it seems to have paid off for them.
Yeah, I mean, this deal apparently follows the sale of about 600,000 tons of U.S. soybeans to China, the largest such sale since March. China is the world's largest rice grower and consumer, and China produced 148-plus million tons of rice in the 2018-19 marketing year. That's more than 42 times the amount it imported, while the U.S. produced a little over 7 million tons of rice during the same period and exported less than 3 million tons. Most of the rice imported into China, by the way, comes from Thailand, Pakistan, and Vietnam, which produce the long grain varieties. Interesting stuff indeed, Melody.
You know, and this is, we talked briefly, and we're just about out of time, but it is interesting about the Russian sailors who died, and, you know, they knew they were on a nuclear submarine, and, you know, if they hadn't been able to stop that fire, you know, kind of, I don't remember where the submarine was at, but could have had some major implications on that. Some
Norway certainly would have been impacted, it said.
Hey, we're impacted. We're out of time. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. And until then, we'll be back tomorrow. Be safe. Good night. And God bless. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Work it all and fool around and have a ball.